You're listening to the Heavenly Chi podcast, episode number 84. Today, Claire and I are joined by Davina Mercury, a Chinese medicine practitioner with over 20 years of experience. Davina trained under the legendary Stephen Clavey and worked closely alongside him in his clinic for many years. She's also completed advanced studies with Marzen Alkafaji. Davina brings a wealth of experience in treating complex internal conditions with a special interest in women's health and dermatology. Her work combines internal treatments with beautifully crafted topical herbal preparations tailored to both the patient and their environment. In today's episode, we'll explore the art and science of treating skin through Chinese medicine, including how to really see the skin, what factors might be holding back healing, and why topical treatment is often the missing piece. Davina, welcome. It's a joy to have you here.
Jack, it's lovely to be on here too.
So you were, I mean, I met you while you were still working with Steve's clinic, which was always really, really interesting since you were seeing a lot of dermatology patients. And I have a bit of an interest in this myself. So I'm particularly, like, personally quite excited to have you here.
Yeah.
And knowing that you've done all of this extra training with Marzen, how did your work with both Stephen and Marzen shape how you understand and treat skin in general? And where did your interest in this come from in the first place?
So having a skin condition yourself makes you interested in treating skin conditions. So growing up, I had eczema, and I also had eczema throughout my university years when I was studying Chinese medicine. And I treated it with the herbs externally and it went away and I was like, oh, it's gone. And so that really perked my interest in treating skin stuff because I could see how effective it was. And then I kind of felt like my training in the dermatology aspect wasn't as complete as it could be. So when I went to the UK, I thought, well, this is the perfect opportunity to study with Marzen, and it was a really great course. It was very thorough. He had so many pictures, and he explained things in a way which I hadn't had it explained to me before. And I think it really comes from looking at the skin and studying the skin and observing the skin, which you can gain so much information from that. And then working with Steve, I think
what was different?
I think it was the fact that each topic was covered really in depth. So when we studied eczema, we really looked at all the different types of slides he had with different types of eczema. It was really clear. And then he also said there are certain patterns, obviously, you can look in the books, which identify this type of eczema and this is what you have to do. Well, not just eczema, but for all the conditions. You know, there's a pattern, this is what it looks like, and these are the main herbs that you would use. So that was useful. And then learning from Steve has a very holistic approach to the body. So sometimes I would see someone with skin conditions and be like, oh no, first we need to treat their gut. And just put the skin issue aside for the moment. But in doing that and treating the gut, the skin issue resolved. So it was like a beautiful collaboration of both teachers and learnings and making it work for me.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah, that's really, really awesome. I love that there's a real kind of combination of the internal and external in the way that you approach this, and that's been influenced by both of your mentors. I mean, I'm sure Marzen does a lot of internal as well as topical.
Yeah, of course. I think just as you grow as a practitioner as well, I remember a couple of cases in my early days where I just totally blasted this poor man's gut with really harsh toxic heat clearers because his skin was terrible and it didn't help. And it made things worse. And I look back now and I think, oh, if only I did this differently, maybe it would have been really different. And he was a friend, so he was just like, just treat me. And I was like, okay. And I really wish I'd taken into account a whole lot more of the holistic approach as opposed to just looking at the skin and going, oh, it looks so damp and hot. I'm going to hit it with all these damp heat clearers. And obviously now, 20 years later, I'm like, let's work on the gut first. Let's make sure that's strong. Let's make sure everything else is intact before we put in a whole bunch of really strong herbs. So that's really important, focusing on the gut, because Steve often was like, let's work on the gut first before doing anything else.
It's really interesting that you say that in the way that you're reflecting in your earlier years, that you were thinking, oh, I'll just treat this dermatologically, you know, I'll just treat this as more of a, you know, like a super, not superficially, but,
yeah,
you know, as something that you can somehow separate the skin from the rest of the body in the way that you approach the treatment. And I remember when I was in my early years of practice, there was another practitioner that I was speaking to I think I was maybe in my second or third year out, and they were talking about a dermatology patient that had come in. They said, oh, I'm just going to treat them dermatologically. And I said, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, you don't really have to do a full intake for a dermatology patient. You just look at the skin and create your diagnosis from that. And I was gobsmacked because I thought, how could you get through a Chinese medicine degree and feel like you can just do a 10-minute intake for a dermatology patient and get good outcomes? And it seems like you have had that exact experience for yourself as well. Is it something that you feel is that how you were taught, that there was a different intake process? Is that part of your uni
education? I can't remember now. It was so long ago, to be honest, but I just remember looking and going, I think it was more like, okay, if it looks really damp and hot, then, you know, you use these sorts of herbs and, you know, you've kind of focused on that. Whereas it's much more nuanced and there's a lot more undercurrency where you've got to, you know, a lot of skin stuff comes from the inside out and, you know, it's not sort of an external, I mean, some things can be external, but mostly it's like an internal issue where there's some imbalance for some reason and you've got to figure that out, whether it be blood deficiency, yin deficiency as well. You know, there's all those sorts of patterns which can affect the skin.
Yeah, and I guess from that perspective, if you're seeing, you know, these damp looking skin conditions, it's not necessarily an internal climate of dampness that's driving that external damp, fluid vesicles.
Melbourne's a really dry, where we live is such a dry environment, so damp is not something from the external but usually it's an internal generation of some sort of imbalance between the gut and liver and who knows, you know, wherever else there might be damp brewing. And it's interesting. I think also emotions and all that will definitely play a huge part in skin eruptions. So always explore those avenues as well.
I think anyone who's experienced a skin condition can testify to stress being a very important factor.
Huge driver. Yeah, big driver. I think half of my skin formulation is actually like a variation of Jiao Wei Shan, to be honest. Such a great formula. So simple.
Very simple.
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool. It's funny. I'm kind of curious as well. When you do get someone, like if you get a new patient in for a skin condition, for example, because it's often one of those things. And I know for myself, even like with my own skin condition and my own interest in this, I still do feel like a little bit daunted by it when I get someone in with, you know, with some eczema or like a rash or like something going on. And I'm like, I go through the whole process. I've also had a similar experience. I'm like, I'll just treat it like this. And it didn't work quite quickly. And so I had to go back to the drawing board. It's funny. I wonder if that's a theme or a pattern in like a lot of people's experience with skin conditions as a Chinese medicine prac.
But I think that's what makes it scary as well, because you think, oh, it, you know, we're doing herbs and you can immediately see whether it's helping or not. And
nowhere to hide.
The problem is people expect immediate results, and it's the small, subtle changes which you're looking out for because you're working from the inside out. Sometimes you can have amazing, huge, like, you know, in a couple of weeks, things change dramatically and it blows me away too when that happens, because I've seen some of the worst types of eczema and just suddenly, and I think sometimes the worse they look, the quicker they are to sort of get better. But I think a lot of patients also expect some immediate results, whereas it can take a bit more time. And so you've got to set that, like, oh, this could take a while first. Give it a month at least and then go from there. Yeah. It's those subtle changes.
Yeah. How do you manage those expectations with patients? Like, how do you present that to them, and what kind of factors are you looking for that will influence how long you suggest that their course of treatment is likely to take?
I always say give it at least about a month, because, you know, it could be something that you start seeing changes within a couple of weeks, but you've got to give them this time frame of it could take longer, much longer than that. So I don't try to make it sound like, oh, no, we can get some miraculous results within, you know, a couple of weeks, because that's not always the case. In the majority of the time, you don't see huge changes until a month's up, or like changes until a month's up. And then you go, okay, well, this has changed. Great. Let's keep going with this. And if there's worsening, then we go, okay, well, we've got to add in more of sort of these sorts of herbs. So I think you set the bar not super high, but just say, give it a bit of time and, you know, we'll start to see if you don't need to use the cortisone so much, or if it's less itchy, if it's less red, blah, 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 those sorts of things. Yeah, I think the problem is with Western medicine, cortisone acts so quickly that people expect similar changes with Chinese medicine, and it's not that easy. It's not that quick.
Do you find that you end up working quite like alongside dermatologists or pharmacists or anything like that when people come to you for skin conditions? Like, do you do like a bit of a blend, or are you... Is the treatment often kind of tailored towards moving away from more pharmaceutical solutions and into a more like kind of long-term sustainable alleviation from them?
Look, I don't discourage my patients from seeing their dermatologist or their GP if they've got these sorts of issues, but I do say let's just give it a bit more time. So I remember I have a patient currently who's got really bad pompholic eczema, and her cortisone creams are getting stronger and stronger. And I was like, look, give this at least 3 weeks and before you consider using that cortisone. If you need to use your old cortisone here or there, that's fine. Anyway, she was happy to agree to that. And so we did what we did, and things were starting to improve slowly, and she was happy. So she didn't need to go down that route, and she actually is off all cortisone and is really happy with the way things have progressed. So now it's, you know, you sort of got to treat the active phase, then once it's more stable, then you consolidate a bit more. And you have to give this sort of timeline of, or like the progression of treatment. First you're treating the active inflamed whatever stage, and then once it's more settled, then you can change it. And that's sort of that treatment progression, and giving them that the idea that, okay, this is something long term. This is not, and it's not a quick fix.
Mm. And you mentioned earlier that the way that you think about skin conditions and the way that you go about treating them has changed since your training with Marzen. Can you speak a little to that?
I think just because his course was so in depth and so great that I mean, I remember, you know, uni, I think it was whatever condition, it was done within like an hour or an hour or two lecture, and that was it. And there was no pictures, there was nothing to show what this condition looks like. There was the patterns that we went through, but then you didn't know what that meant as well on the skin. Like, what does a blood deficiency compared to a blood stasis pattern look like on the skin? I mean, if you see a lot of skin, you can sort of see what that means. But if you haven't seen that as a young student, you have no idea what that means sometimes. And so going with Marzen's course, and he had so many pictures and slides that he went through, it really solidified, oh, okay, that does make sense now. and then as you see more and more skin patients come through, it's quite clear, like the skin is like a painting, really. So maybe now, looking at the skin issues that do come through, I can be like, all right, that is definitely blood stasis, that is definitely blood deficiency causing dryness. But you still need to go through the whole internal intake and, you know, ask them about their gut health, ask them about sleep, ask them about stress, blah, 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 diet, all that, those sorts of things. But yeah, I think it was just because at uni, I think dermatology was covered in one semester. One lecture may have been like acne, whereas with Marzen, there was hours spent looking at photos, going through cases. So it was really different. It was a diploma. It was like a whole extra learning.
Mm-hmm. It sounds amazing and so much more in depth than, you know, the one lecture on eczema where Xiaofeng San is for everything, right?
Yeah, I don't think I use that very much at all.
Love this idea of the I loved your metaphor of like the skin is like the skin's like a painting. I'd love if you could like talk a little bit more about that as well. Like what kinds of like visual and like if you do palpation, tactile cues, like what are you looking for in this painting that tells you where to go?
I mean, I think I remember seeing this patient who was this old elderly man, and he had terrible this condition. I can't even remember what it was, but it was just like purple. And he goes, "You're the first person who's looked at my legs." Like all the Western GPs were like focusing on blood tests and I don't know what else, but he goes, "You're the first person who's looked at my legs." Like, okay, well, there's definitely some sort of blood stasis happening here. And looking at the skin condition is really important, and looking where it is, which parts of the body, is it lower, upper, touching it as well. Like there's no harm in touching skin conditions. Unless it's something like scabies, I'm not really afraid of contracting anything. What else? So yeah, having a good look at the skin is really important because that will tell you a lot as well, where the crusts are, if there's any, what the pustules look like, if they're really deep and painful or erupting and purulent, then that tells you a lot as well, what sort of herbs to use. That's quite important because you can have all these blood or heat toxin herbs, but you've got to choose the right one according to the level of the toxin in the skin as well.
Is there anything in particular you're tracking for or looking for that gives away that level, like what level it's at when you're looking at the skin, or is that something you get more from your internal diagnostic questioning?
No, if there's stuff that's happening on the skin and it's like erupting and when there's pustules, you've got to figure out which level is it at. Is it the deep sort of fleshy level where it's slow to resolve and painful? That tells you there's more blood stasis and it's really stuck, maybe some phlegm as well. Is it superficial and pops easily? Well, then that's more like superficial toxins. So then you would use things like Jin Yin Hua, Lian Chao, the sort of more superficial toxin clearers. If there are the deep ones, then you'd be also looking at things like Pu Gong Ying, Zhe Hua Di Ding, which are deeper and resolve deeper toxins according, I mean, that's how Marzen had taught us. There was these levels at which some of these toxin clearing herbs work. And then also the same with dryness. Is there dryness causing fissures and cracks because there's so much lack of nourishment? So then you would also be like, okay, well, we need to maybe add some blood invigorating herbs for that. How deep is this going? What bits of flesh is it affecting? Is it just the superficial levels or deeper in? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Are you using like four levels? Like a Wen Bing style?
Oh, like a
or is this like, are you talking like physiological levels of the skin?
Oh,
like
I see.
Epidermis, dermis, subcutaneous.
I think there is that whole Wen Bing level, you know, Ying Shui Qi Wei level that some doctors might use. And I think to some degree when you study skin, that is also you think of it like that as well. But I don't always look at it like that. I don't go, oh, it's at the Ying level. But you can look at the skin in that way. So that's quite interesting. I mean, maybe I do, because there is things where I'm like, oh, that is definitely at the qi level, so we need to vent a bit more and clear more heat. So yeah, the way you look at the skin can evolve from Wen Bing theory as well. So I think a lot of the Wen Bing formulations are used in a lot of skin issues as well.
That's really cool.
Because I think if you do get things where there's macules and where there's redness deep in the skin, then that is more like a yin and blood level heat issue. So then you would use things which cool the blood in that way. And that is a Wen Bing thing. Yeah. Wen Bing thing.
That's great. That's really, really very insightful, actually, because I had it's funny that when you were describing your experience of the college dermatology class, I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty familiar. It's very like, it's still very much the same. I found it really engaging, but there's very few pictures. Like my teacher was quite good and she did bring in like pictures for certain things. And that helped quite a lot. I'm quite lucky.
Yeah, it is such a visual thing that you need pictures. Yeah,
I think possibly, especially since for a lot of people, at least in my experience of it, it can be the visual component of their condition that is the most distressing. Like if there's not necessarily pain or discomfort, which there isn't with certain things. It's like a lot of the time it's the way it looks and how they feel as a result, at least from what I've heard from people.
Yeah,
they feel uncomfortable or embarrassed or like they don't want to be seen. And I know quite a few people, I've talked to quite a few people who will then like cover, especially if there's something on their face, they might have this condition, and then they'll cover it with products and makeup and things like that. And then that flares it up more. And so they have to put more on, and it can be this really, really uncomfortable, vicious cycle.
I think I remember Steve telling me once, he goes, I remember this story where someone had terrible acne and the doctor said, get rid of all the mirrors in your house. And they got rid of all the mirrors. This is like a doctor telling a doctor sort of, or something, you know, not that Steve told his patients to get rid of the mirrors, but this was something that Steve told me. And they got rid of all the mirrors in the house and his acne cleared up. So sometimes it can be this real, obviously it can be real and really distressing depending on what you have. But I do have some patients who come in with skin issues and skin complaints, and I'm like, where? And it might be a tiny little dot, which you know, couple of dots that do appear here and there. And for them, it's really distressing. But visually, I can see the tiniest of blemishes. And in that case, I treat their shin. Okay, right. Let's calm things down a little bit. Let's get some perspective. But we live in this world where perfection, it's, you know, you've got filters, you've got all these it's hard to keep up sometimes. And the skin is a living, breathing organ, and it can have its days where it's imperfect. And I think, yeah. But then you do have people with terrible skin conditions, and it is something that we need to treat.
I'd love to know a little bit about how and if, like, acupuncture fits into your treatments, because I know we've talked a lot about herbs so far. Do you do a lot of acupuncture? Because I know Steve in particular was, like, towards, like, the later part of his career was exclusively herbs. Are you still using acupuncture?
I still do acupuncture just because I think it's such a great adjunct treatment. I do tell my patients, this is an adjunct treatment for you. But in a lot of cases where there's lots of stress and anxiety or some heat as well, acupuncture is really great. Just, you know, really settles things down emotionally. They feel grounded. They feel great afterwards. And then in some cases I'll be choosing points to clear heat, and that can be useful as well, really helpful. So I do quite a bit of acupuncture as well. In most cases, yeah.
How often do you come across patients that have a nickel allergy? I only say this because a practitioner who worked at my clinic in the past, I won't reveal their name just for their own privacy, but they had a nickel allergy, and it meant that the acupuncture needles gave them contact dermatitis.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Like you can get a bit of redness and swelling at the site.
Yeah. And so, you know, looking into it, there was a certain brand and type of needle that they needed to use so that they weren't exposed to the typical acupuncture needle and the metals that are used. And I know that there is a high correlation between eczema and dermatitis and nickel allergy. Is that something that you come across very often? Is that something that you kind of take into account? Or I guess if someone's only having acupuncture once a week, once a fortnight, it's maybe not as much of a concern as it would be for an acupuncturist who's handling needles for hours each week.
I've never thought about the needles being a nickel allergy, but I have seen some patients who develop like a bit of redness and like itching after the needling. And sometimes I'm like, oh, is that some heat coming out or some wind, you know, or is that an actual allergy from the needle and the metal? Yeah. It's not something that I've come across often, but obviously it is an issue. So, I guess be aware of it. Yeah, it's funny that because sometimes you do see like a little bit of a welt or hive after some needles come out. So that certainly could be like a allergic reaction to the needle. Not often though. And I think sometimes if you do more of the needling, which clears the heat or the wind from the skin, that does reduce because there's less of an allergy reaction in general when you are treating skin stuff.
Mm. Yeah, and those types of welts that you're speaking of are different than what we might notice as like a halo around the needle, which is more of a diffuse pale pink that will clear after a certain amount of time.
Yeah, definitely. I haven't seen that in a while though.
The little halos around the needles? Or the welts?
The welts. I haven't seen that in a while. Mm. But it can happen.
Yeah, I don't come across it very often, but in my super sensitive patients, I'm more likely.
Yeah. I guess emotionally some people, like if they're super sensitive as well, when they're like highly stressed or anxious, I do tend to use like thinner needles and they can get quite red reactions as well. Mm.
And I think if you're using the coated needles, it's less of a problem.
Yeah. I've got a friend who's doing or using these really sticky needles. I thought I'd give them a go. And geez, they're grippy. It's so interesting how the coated needles really do just slide right through. And then these uncoated needles, which remind me of like the old huartos, which aren't like that anymore. Huartos are actually a little bit more slippery now. And like these other ones, I think they're carbo. They're like super grippy. I'm like, ooh.
Well, apparently under a microscope, there you can see like these small little metal filaments coming out to the side.
I think the silicon-coated smooth needles. There's different schools of thought with what sort of needles and what you should use and what you're trying to achieve with them. But, yeah, I think always getting the chi, like trying to get the sensation of chi and manipulating that is important. So I tend to use slightly coated needles, I guess, but not, say, the super slippery serins. depending on my patient. But, yeah, I generally use slightly coated. I've gone back to using huartos, which are really quite nice compared to 20 years ago.
It's been about that long since I've used huartos. It might be time to revisit.
They're actually really nice. They're sort of a blend of both, slightly grippy and a little bit less rusted nail-like.
Not like the cloud dragon needles of old.
What were they like?
They were the Cathay brand long time ago. They were very grippy. But that was, you know, 15, 20 years ago. I think needles have changed a lot since then. And there's so many brands now, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah. But I remember being straight out of uni and it's like, oh, I don't want to make any pain. I don't want to cause any pain. So, you know, we were using serins a lot. And now it's like, no, we need to get the chi.
I'm still very much in the school of thought of, you know, I don't cause pain unless it's absolutely necessary. I use the 0.16.
Oh, wow.
Needles, yeah. The coated needles.
Oh, wow, yeah.
They still get good chi.
Of course. Yeah. And some people are so sensitive. Like I'll use those as well, but it's just on my super sensitive patients, whereas I've got some blokes where I'm like, right, 40s, here we go.
Yeah, so I like to just look for changes in the pulse and or in the tongue and then I'm happy that the chi has arrived.
Well, maybe I spent too much time in China. No, I didn't spend that much time.
It's a whole different world in China and the needle.
Yeah.
Did you spend any time in China?
I did. I spent 3 months after graduating. I went to the Zhejiang Provincial Hospital in Zhejiang, Hangzhou, and that was amazing. I wish I could go back and do it again. It's different, you know, as soon as you've come out of uni, it is a different experience to how and what you'd gain from it as a practitioner now, I think. But, yeah, it was a really interesting 3 months.
I mean, what was it like? What kind of things did you see? Like, was it like a bit of everything? If you were in a hospital, were you seeing like a lot of acute conditions and were you actually practicing? Were you doing a lot of shadowing? How was
that? Shadowing and watching because I was straight out of uni. But because you're put into the hospital setting, you follow a doctor from, you know, 8 in the morning till I think their lunch break was at 1. And they would see like 60 patients in the morning and then you'd go back and then do the afternoon shift and it would be all in the gynae department following one doctor for a few weeks and then you'd move to like the pediatric, ward or then – and it was the whole integration of Western and Chinese medicine. So they have the Western hospital right next to the Chinese medicine hospital and then they would be like, right, go and get this scan done, go and get these bloods done, then come back and tell me and then we'll – so it was a real integration of the two systems and that was amazing to see. Yeah, the future of Chinese medicine is is going to be like that, hopefully one day.
There was also a lot of dual prescribing where I went in my placement in China.
Dual.
And what I thought were custom Chinese herbal formulas, because often they'd say, oh, we're going to prescribe this formula, and they'd have all of these secret formulas, and they'd be like secret formula number one and secret formula number two. And then occasionally they'd say these other names, and I'm like, you know, I was inquiring to the translator, is this a formula? And then they'd look it up and they'd go, oh, it's this. And it would be like cortisone, for example.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Or, you know, some kind of antibiotic or some kind of blood pressure medication that they're prescribing alongside the acupuncture, alongside the herbal formula.
Yeah. That was the case I saw in the dermatology department, like with really, you know, cute people who were in hospital and staying in hospital. They'd have their Chinese medicine, and then they'd also be on whatever Western drugs that they thought was necessary. Yeah. And then whatever was in the creams, they were a bit herbal and a bit cortisone. There was a mixture of both things. But yeah, that was an interesting, I mean, I would recommend going to China if you can get there and find a good place to study. It's such an eye-opener.
I was shocked at how much cortisone was used in the dermatology department where I was. Yeah. Is that something you observed as well?
For the patients that were in hospital, yes, they were using it, but trying to think back, I think a lot of the outpatients, they may have had some cortisone as well. But then I have a friend who sent their husband to some Chinese medicine dermatologist in Sydney, and, you know, they got herbs for their internal presentation, and then they got some powders to soak their hands in, and then they got this cream. And he was using it and everything was working great. And then so she sort of was like, what's in the cream? And the doctor's like, just a little bit of cortisone as well. So, you know, just till it settles. I was like, okay. So when my patients are using cortisone alongside Chinese herbal medicine, I'm not always like, don't use it, because for them it can be really helpful. But what I do say is start the herbs, keep using your creams as you need, but let's try to back down on it. So it's not like, and usually it depends on the type and level of steroid that you're using. If it's a mild one, then you're more easily going to be able to get off it. Whereas if it's a really strong cortisone cream, then it can sometimes be a bit of a struggle, just because the rebound effect of going off something really strong like that can really be a rocky, tumultuous ride. Mm.
And especially with a lot of the strong steroid creams, they also weaken the skin over time. Yeah. You know, the more you use them, the thinner and less resilient the skin becomes, and it's kind of like this process of rebuilding the integrity of the skin.
I mean, it changes everything. It changes the microbiome of the skin. It makes the staph bacteria more prevalent. So when you do go off it, staph's like, wow, I'm free to go crazy. So, yeah, it's really awful. Awful for some patients.
Do you see, like, a similar thing happening with any other, like, drugs or medications that people come to you on or that they're taking when they come in? Or is it just, like, steroids and cortisone and that kind of thing?
I usually ask what they're on so I can sort of see if there's any other medications that might be causing effects on the skin. So Melbourne's really dry. And there's often eczema. I see a lot of eczema cases. That's like, it must be what I'm drawn. People are drawn to me for. I see a lot of eczema. I see a lot of acne cases. And, you know, those are the majority of people I see. I don't actually see a lot of people with psoriasis for some reason. I think they must all go to another practitioner, which is fine because I don't. Yeah, which is fine. Anyway, but usually I look out for people using antihistamines because they can be quite drying overall as a system. It just dries up everything. And people use it to help control their itch. So for them, you know, taking antihistamine stops the itch in the skin, makes them less irritated, but in the long run, it can also dry things out, which then also hinders treatment. So yeah, usually I'll say, let's try wean off those as well. What else? Cholesterol lowering medication, people on, what are they called? Do you know what they are?
Statins.
Statins, yes, thank you. Statins. And that can just dry up all the good fats in your body, and then your skin's just really dry and itchy from that if you're prone to, like, eczema as well. People going through menopause, that's going to cause, you're going to see people with dry skin or irritations coming up from that as well. I can't think of anything else, but yeah.
You mentioned earlier about solar keratosis before we started recording.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that sometimes you're making up some topical formulas for that. Do you see that very often in clinic?
What's that, solar keratosis or making up? Yeah, not that often. And I usually say if you don't see changes within a month, then go to your dermatologist and perhaps get that cut off or, you know, treat, because you shouldn't really leave things like that. So it just depends. Yeah, I don't like to sort of go, I can treat that for certain, but I usually would be like, let's give it a month. And definitely anything which is black and melanite, you know, dangerous looking, I would be like, go to your dermatologist and get that looked at, because I don't treat that.
Salient advice.
I do remember seeing someone and they were using something which pretty much burnt their skin. I can't remember what it was. It was like a
black salve.
Yes, that's the one. And I was, are you sure you want to be doing that? Anyway. But yeah, they were adamant they did not want to see the dermatologist. I'm like, well, it's probably a bit safer to actually just get it cut off and burn a great big hole in your arm.
Yeah.
So yeah.
How about Roaccutane? How do you see people in the recovery process from Roaccutane?
Yeah, so with Roaccutane, it's usually, like, it was interesting. I do remember this young girl I was seeing, and she was on Roaccutane, but then her eczema got quite bad and inflamed. And it was all this dryness happening in her skin. So we were treating the inflammation of the skin to prevent the eczema sort of flaring, and that really worked. But then I was also using herbs to treat the acne so that we could get her off the Roaccutane sooner. And then once she was off that, you know, there was a bit more nourishing after that, but she was good. So yeah, you've always got to be careful with things that really dry out the skin, because that can cause lots of inflammation and heat. So yeah, repair is important, and just making sure that they don't do anything like take internally, eat very yin nourishing foods, water-based foods, and not overheat themselves too much.
What sort of diet recommendations do you make for your patients?
I don't go crazy with the diet stuff. I do generally leave it quite open, because I don't like people going on strict diets. I think that's really awful. I just tell them the main things to avoid, which are generally the hot heating things in most cases, like hot spicy foods, alcohol, too much coffee, too much greasy foods, depending if there's damp issues. I don't really say let's go on a elimination diet or anything like that. I think that's not my forte. That's not the road I go down. I think it's a bit of a rabbit warren. I think some things can be, you know, it's not my thing anyway. So I generally stick to the general Chinese medicine dietary therapy, because there can be so many different diets out there. I think there's the antihistamine diet, you know, the Oh gosh, there's so many different avenues. And for some people, it is a thing. And I'm like, you just go down that road and you do what you think you need to, which is fine. But I won't specifically say to them, you need to cut out all these foods. Just watch out for the hot heating stuff.
How often do you see skin conditions that are, so rather than being hot in nature, that are more cold in nature?
A good question. Cold skin conditions that, I mean, they do happen.
So I'm just wondering if the advice for avoiding hot and heating foods is kind of universal for most skin conditions.
Look, I mean, not necessarily. It's individual, you know. You've got to do the intake. You've got to see if there is a lot of heat. You've got to see if there's a lot of spice and greasy foods in their diet, if they're loving alcohol, whatever, you know, you've got to do that. But I think when there's more cold and involved, it might be when there's like gynae issues as well. So sometimes with a chong and ren knot, well, like, you know, when you've got acne on the face or it's more related to the cycles, then there might be more of a cold stagnation causing some heat, but it's mostly blood stasis. So in that case, I'd be like, eat lots of warming and nourishing foods.
Yeah. Yeah. I've only seen it a handful of times myself. I had a couple of students years ago who had acne, hormonal acne, and they'd been receiving treatment from the student clinic at school, and had had a year and a half of herbal medicine to clear damp heat. And they were just so cold and so deficient that literally everything cleared up with Yogui One.
Oh, wow. There you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which is not the first port of call for any dermatology formula, but in the context of, you know, a year and a half of potentially the incorrect
herbs, right.
Or maybe they were correct at the start and then they stopped being after a while.
Yeah, but so I think that whole jump straight to like skin stuff is all hot and heating, and let's cool them down, and you know, that's where the intake and the whole, let's see the body as a whole, and let's see where it's coming from internally. That's all Chinese medicine.
Totally is. And so, are you, if someone's in that more acute phase, you're thinking. If someone's in that more acute phase of their condition, whether it's eczema or or psoriasis or acne, how does your thinking change as they move from that acute phase through to the more like consolidation phase? Like, how are you changing the formula?
So it would be more from changing and taking away some of the harsher herbs and then seeing how the body adapts and is able to cope without those sorts of herbs in their script or formulas, and then sticking on something which is a bit more harmonizing. So either invigorating blood gently, cooling gently, nourishing as well. So usually there's more of a, when there is a lot of heat, you are using harsher herbs to quell that. And it's sort of that progression of taking those away, seeing how the body goes without them, making it more resilient and stronger as well, and then all being able to cope, and then weaning off the consolidating herbs as well and seeing how the body goes just without everything.
Yeah. So you're doing, I guess, a mix of branch and root. Are you doing more branch at the start and then more root towards the end?
So, treating the constitution sort of underlying there, but then having these herbs which attack the branches and then removing those branch herbs and then focusing on the root.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you mainly use raw herbs or do you use a lot of granules or some patents as well? How does that play out in your clinic?
I try to use the raw herbs because I love them so much. I mean, who doesn't when they're practicing Chinese medicine and the herbal and having access to raw herbs? And just given that I worked with Steve for like within his clinic for so long, herbs were just, you know, a given. So I try to use raw herbs mostly and see how people go. And then once it's at a stage or if they just can't take it anymore, then I might move to powdered herbs or granules. But I do have a case where I started off with a patient. She had pomphotic eczema and she was on the raw herbs for a couple of weeks, but two young kids, work, it's just too much. So we went straight to the pills and that's been going really well. So it just depends what. Yeah. So, I mean, I do love using the raw herbs, but I tailor it to what my patients can and can't do. And with the pills, you've just got to do a really big dose.
Yeah, really big dose, right?
I mean, like 15 pills, two or three times a day of two different. Anyway, it just depends on the patient. And if you can get results with pills, then great. Let's do it.
Let's do it. What about some other types of, I guess, less commonly spoken about skin conditions like lichen sclerosis, or I don't know, how much do you see things like cysts and other types of nodules? What about those, like the cherry hemangiomas?
Yeah. I mean, when people come in for things like that, Chinese medicine doesn't really treat it that well. I think when it's like, I mean, not all of those, cherry angiomas, that's what I'm saying. You just may as well get them zapped off. But lichen sclerosis, when it's an autoimmune issue or related to an autoimmune condition, then Chinese medicine can work really well when it comes to those situations. So definitely treat the whole body. Don't just look at the skin and freak out. Look at the whole body and just treat according to the pattern you see when it comes to those situations. Yeah.
And maybe add in a couple of skin herbs if you
can.
What are your favorite skin herbs?
Oh, I mean, I love Shengdi. It's just my favorite herb. And Bai Xiao. Shengdi and Bai Xiao.
They're your BFFs.
Yes, BFFs. Yeah. I mean, I like the taste of Shengdi, so that's why I use it a lot as well. I remember Steve was always like, oh, Shengdi, and he never put it in. Yeah.
I think everyone's got a herb like that, don't they? I think Mudan Pea makes everything taste gross.
Oh, that's probably my second favorite herb for skin.
It's a great herb. It just doesn't taste great.
Yeah, you're right. That's true.
And do you use a lot of herbs like lugan, jianyinhua, lianchao? Are you using those types of herbs?
Of course. Yeah. Lianchao, jianyinhua, they're my sort of favorite toxic heat clearers. I don't really use lugan that much. I don't find it that strong. But it certainly is effective, like when there's throat issues. Gansao is an underrated herb in bigger doses.
How big is the big dose that you like to use for Gansao?
Maybe up to 10, you know, 10. Yeah. 10's big enough.
I'm in agreement with you. I like big doses of Gansao as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just that subtle herb which does so many little things, and like you just tweak the dose and it can become quite a strong, potent herb in clearing heat and still supporting the spleen. Yeah. What else? Bai Xiao. Bai Xiao is another favorite. Who doesn't love Bai Xiao?
Do you use a lot of Dunshen?
I do sometimes when, for example, Shengdi may be too sticky and heavy for some people, and then I'll use a big dose of that. It's a very moderate herb, so. You know, 15 plus grams is okay. Yeah.
And what are your favorite herbs for itching?
Bai Ji Li, Bai Xian Pi, They're my two BFFs in that instance. I'm going through a phase of defutsu. That's just a phase I'm going through at the moment. I don't use jingjie. A lot of people do. It's just the taste can be so bad.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, so I don't tend to use that. I use feng feng, but it's quite mild. But, yeah, bai ji li, bai shen pi, they're my two that are always in there if there's itch. Yeah.
What about kushan? I know that's one that people often go to for itching.
I use that if there's damp as well, a lot of dampness. So I'll use kushan if there's dampness and in the lower part as well. It's quite bitter though, so it can be like bleh. If I'm using a longdan shegan type of script, then kushan might be in there as well.
Yeah. I often think of yeja tang for itching.
Oh, yeah. I would use that if there's blood deficiency and itching, yeah. So it depends why the itch is there and if there's dampness involved as well. You've got to pick your herbs. So usually I'm seeing people with eczema and there might be that dampness there and you'd be using herbs which stop itch and clear damp as well. If there's more dryness or like eczema with dryness or in the later stages, then yeah, jiaotang's perfect. Lovely herb. Calms him.
Shen calmer, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
How often do you see people with concurrent dampness and blood deficiency? And how do you prioritize that?
Good question. Usually I would treat the damp issue first, carefully, considerately, without too many drying herbs. Or if I am to use something like longdan sao, then it would be like a small dose. But usually I would be treating the dampness first, and then once that's cleared, switching or changing it to more nourishing. Yeah. It's a tricky one though. You don't like when you do see it, you're like, oh, but then that's where something like Lu Wei Di Huang Huang or Zhe Bai Di Huang Huang is perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. The inbuilt intelligence in those formulas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How often do you go to like a standard classical or like a pre-made formula? Are you doing like a lot of custom or is it?
I mean, I have my favorites, but it depends if I'm doing raw herbs. If I'm doing raw herbs, then I love to be my own chef and create my own little scripts. But it's always based maybe on a formulation that I'm thinking of. So whether it be like a blood heat cooling herb formulation or a like longdan or a damp heat clearing formula like longdan jie gan tan, I would modify it to my needs. But if I can't modify it to my needs and I'm using a straight formula, then I just go straight for that. I have one clear idea of I want to clear damp, then I'm going to use that formula. I want to stop itch, then I'll use that formula. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, when you have raw herbs and you've got a whole array to choose from, it's nice to make your own little scripts up.
Mix and match, choose your own adventure.
Yeah, but also keep it simple. Choose either two or three main things to focus on and then stick with it. Don't try to do too much in one go. Yeah.
That's a good piece of advice, I think. Do you see that, like, is that something you see a lot of or hear of a lot of practitioners doing, like overcomplicating their formulations or like is that an area you see people tripping up in often, particularly with dermatology?
Yeah, I think as a practitioner you think, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to, you know, put it, and you kind of lose focus. Whereas if you have a formula and you've got, all right, I'm going to clear heat, I'm going to clear a bit of damp and stop itch, done. Not worry about anything else for now. That's kind of the way to go, I think, because, I mean, I remember when I was came out of uni, I don't know what, anyway, some of the formulations back then were like 25 herbs. What was I doing? And you want to do everything and you want to help everyone with all their issues, but sometimes you've just got to focus and just be a bit more targeted. So, yeah.
How do you decide which aspect of, like, particularly like a complex presentation, how do you decide which part you're going to focus on?
Oh, well, obviously with the intake, you sort of go, right, well, what is the main pathogen here or pattern here? And then you go from that. So finding that main pattern, the root cause, is important. And then treating a couple of the branches.
So you're starting with the root and then addressing at least some of the branches.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
If you could give some advice to yourself when you were a starting out practitioner, if you could go back and speak to Davina, the graduate, what would you say to her?
I would say keep it simple. Keep it simple and focus on, one or two things. Just keep it simple. Start with, like, a formula, try it out and see what happens. Don't overcomplicate things.
I love that. I love that. Any parting words of wisdom, Davina?
I think that's it. Keep it simple. Don't need to overcomplicate things.
Sometimes you have to go all the way down the rabbit hole, all the way to Wonderland and back to
know. Of course. Yeah, that's right.
The best way.
That's right. Yeah, it's like going full circle sometimes.
Yep, treat the pattern. Becomes easier when you become more familiar with what the patterns look like.
Well, yeah, that's right. I think it takes time. Years of practice. Years of practice and, always. I think it was always funny because I remember having breaks in my years of practice, having babies, all those sorts of things, but you have a bit of a break and then you come back. And always after the break it was like, all right, let's just keep it simple. And that was always the best way to start things and not overcomplicate things. Yeah.
Well, before we sign off then, Davina, and before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to plug?
Yeah. What's a plug?
Yeah. Do you have any workshops coming up? Do you have any services that you offer? Is there any way for people, like practitioners in particular, to work with you if they want to learn more about how you practice or how you do things?
Yeah, I'm always open to people like asking questions and helping them if they need. I also make my own little batches of small skin creams. So if anyone's interested in utilizing these, they can get in touch with me just through my website email, which is hello@cura.com.au. It's curaah. I'm always open to anyone needing help with any skin stuff if they're wanting to reach out. So, yeah, please do. It's not as difficult as it may seem.
Awesome. And we'll put put those in the show notes for everybody so they don't have to try and write it down as well. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And thank you for supporting the show. Please remember to rate us on whatever platform you're listening to this on. Share it with someone you think would find it interesting. And please leave us any feedback, especially if you like it. Your support is what keeps us going. Until next time, thanks, Davina. Thanks, Claire.
Thank you.
Thanks, Davina.
Thanks for having me.
See you next time.
See you next time.